You're listening to Flaunt. Find your sparkle and create a life you love after infidelity or betrayal. A podcast for women who've been betrayed by their intimate partner and want to turn their devastation into an invitation to reclaim themselves and their worth. Tune in weekly so you can start making sense of it all and learn how to be okay on the inside, no matter what goes on the outside. Download your free Betrayal Recovery Toolkit at BetrayalRecoveryGuide.com.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you been struggling lately? Relationship issues impact every area of your life. When I found out about my husband's infidelity, I was so devastated. I could barely function. Sleeping was impossible because I couldn't shut off my brain. Eating was a challenge because I felt nauseous all the time, and for the first month or so, everything felt pointless. Whether you're having trouble sleeping, feeling hopeless, or just can't focus, BetterHelp is here to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help. You can talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to help that might not be available in your area. Just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you'll be matched with a therapist in under 24 hours. Then you can schedule secure video and phone sessions. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages, and everything you share is completely confidential. I know that confidentiality was important for me, especially early on when I couldn't even get my own mind wrapped around what was happening. And it was so comforting to be able to speak with someone candidly about everything I was going through, to validate that what I was feeling and experiencing was completely normal. You can request a new therapist at no additional charge anytime. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. Special offer to Flaunt. Create a life you love after infidelity and betrayal listeners. You get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Flaunt. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Flaunt, FLAUNT. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast.
Hello and welcome to Flaunt. Find your sparkle and create a life you love after infidelity or a betrayal. I'm Laura Cheadle, and if you've been with me for a while, you know that I'm an attorney. And you know that we've had attorneys on the show before. In particular, we have had lawyers who have talked about things like divorce and custody and like all of those things that you would think about when you think about infidelity or divorce or betrayal. Today's guest is not going to talk about divorce and custody and all of that kind of stuff. Danny Caron is an attorney. He is known as the lovable lawyer. And what I really, really appreciate about him is he's really passionate about providing access to justice for all people. He's passionate about educating people about where the law comes into play and things to know. And I know that might sound like, what do you mean, Laura, things to know? And the reason I'm kind of stumbling on that is because law is everywhere. Whether it's getting a lease on a new apartment, whether it's, I mean, it's everything. It's there's employment law, there's divorce, there's leases, there's consumer protection. There's just all of these things. And so often we don't even know that it's a legal matter. And then we find out that we've been hurt in some way or that we had a remedy that we didn't know existed. So that's what we're going to talk about today is where the law might be impacting you. What you might need to know, why lawyers aren't scary, who you can reach out to, and just all of that good stuff. So with that, welcome to the show, Danny. It's really great to have you here.
It's great to be here. And with that sort of lead in, I don't know that you need me because you hit it right on the head. The law is everywhere. It's just that people don't know it. And that's why we're together today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, start by sharing a little bit about yourself with our audience, because you have done so many amazing things, but let them get to know you a little bit more and tell them why you are the lovable lawyer.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, I've been practicing law in the traditional sense for about 31 years now. It adds up. And I do mostly consumer work for plaintiffs, meaning folks who have legal claims they want to assert against somebody else. And over my time in the business, I came to appreciate that there's this kind of societal bias against access to justice, where people who tend to deserve it the most tend to get it the least. And like you said, that results in people not knowing they have a legal issue, or if they have an issue, not knowing how to resolve it, or if knowing how to maybe resolve it, not having somebody to help implement that resolution, or knowing how to find a lawyer, or how to pay for a lawyer, and all these sorts of things and concerns. So with that realization in mind, I figured, you know what, maybe we can do better as lawyers. I mean, we kind of get in the way, but why not bring the law directly to people and enhance, raise their aptitude, their awareness for the law, for legal issues, so that they can do something for themselves in a world where lawyers often are inaccessible, they're unaffordable. I took a look then at the daytime TV landscape with all these thoughts in mind, and internet landscape too. And I observed a few things. I saw there's a lot of, call it, emotional wellness content out there, like Dr. Phil talking about how to be safe and sound in your mind and body. There's also a lot of, I saw, financial wellness content out there. Jim Cramer, Susie Orman talking about how to set up a 529 for your kid or an IRA for yourself. But where it came to that third essential wellness bucket, to my mind, legal, which, by the way, when it tips, it spills into the other two because you freak out and you go broke.
Yes.
Really nothing out there, but these kind of trumped up, more exploitative than anything, courtroom shows where they home in on people who are already in the soup. They're already suffering through something, and you watch them flail around trying to get out of it, rather than, like I want to do, sliding the dial back and being more preventative, kind of like a legal physical. Like you go to the doctor to get a physical to avoid getting sick. This is kind of your legal physical to avoid stepping into legal problems. So that's what the brand is all about. To take your second question first, in terms of who I am and why I've got such a passion for and penchant for really promoting this sort of brand and content to people. So I mentioned, I've been doing this type of work for 30 years. I saw this big gap in the system. I also teach law school. I like to teach and help and contribute and raise awareness for about 13 years for the American Bar Association, which is the big, call it, legal trade association, which of course you know, and now your listeners do too. Out there, I chaired what's called the National Institute on Class Actions. Class actions are lawsuits brought by one or two folks on behalf of everybody else. They're the big ones where people don't have the voice to help themselves. One person does as a representative of everybody else to affect real and meaningful change. So I ran that program. This program is the biggest, most well-respected, robust, well-attended class action program in the country for federal judges, mostly professors, law professors and lawyers. And I got on stage a lot. I got to teach a lot. I got to put on a show, not your vapid, soulless, antiseptic, vanilla, pro forma, to be expected kind of program that a lot of us might be familiar with the press conference configuration, you know, the panel and the four folks lined up. I'm just kind of reciting PowerPoints that people largely ignore anyway, because it's like you're on your iPhone in 10, 20 seconds. I swapped that out in favor of writing three-act plays and talk shows and game shows and mock oral arguments and mock mediations and things to keep people entertained. Because if you're not entertaining, you're not keeping folks' attention. You got 3 seconds to grab it, you better grab it, right?
Yes.
So I took that background, the performing background, and I was a speech and rhetoric major in undergrad anyway. So I like being up in front of the crowd, the bigger the better, as you can probably tell. Okay. And I combined all these interests and concerns, along with, I should add, I teach law school too. So I'm really teaching a rigorous textual lesson routinely to law students. I started teaching at Columbia Law School. I'm now at Ohio State of Michigan, and I go back and forth. And it is possible for the two schools to get along. So So I took all of those experiences and combined them into this lovable lawyer brand, where I'm trying to bring this sort of brand and awareness and aptitude and attention and accessibility to people in a free, fun, and friendly way, so that they too can stay out of trouble from the get-go in various senses. We could talk all about the different types of topics as we go, but the list is endless.
It really is endless. And that's where I'd kind of like to start, because my listeners have experienced infidelity. They have been betrayed by their intimate partner. As you know, that pulls the rug out from you in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. People might need to go get an apartment. They might be renting a hotel for a while. They might need to start thinking about all of these different concerns. They might need to go back to school. They might need, where are some of the intersects with the law in a situation like that? Where are some of these places where people might go, oh, I didn't even realize that was a legal issue. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Well, how about this? Let's say you've got a family cell phone plan and your husband, it's in your husband's name.
Yep.
And now you've got to get your own cell phone, your own number. You want to port your number so that people can continue to reach you. Now, when you go to Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, whomever, and there are only a few vendors, all of them offer you, of course, a contract, and all of them have baked into their contract at the end in the small print, by which time you have a headache if you even get that far, what's called a forced arbitration clause and class action ban.
Yes.
What's that? That sounds legal. That sounds intimidating. Well, it ought to be, because they're putting it in there not to help you, believe me. And what it says is, when, not if, but when you have a problem with your cell phone provider, whether they overcharge you, they have an extra line on your account, whatever, you can't take them to court. You forfeit your Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial. That's a pretty darn important, you know, right. It's a constitutional amendment. It's the top 10 of the Bill of Rights. I mean, it means something, but not so much to the Supreme Court, because it was eviscerated about 15 years ago. And you can be forced to go to a private tribunal on an individual basis, not even as a class, just yourself. So you make minimal, if any, impact, no impact really, to the company. And the data show that about 97% of the time, because the defendant, or here the cell phone company, chooses the arbitrator or arbitrators and pays for them, you're going to lose. Why? Because if you win too much, they're not getting hired back. Total inside game. So these are legal considerations that you would never know to have in mind, much less keep in mind, when you have to do something as fundamental and basic as going down the street to T-Mobile and getting yourself a new cell phone. And this is something you will likely have to do, along with getting an apartment, along with signing up for utilities, along with perhaps getting new credit cards when you're going through divorce.
Yeah. I love that you brought up cell phone, because that is one of those places too, where people are like, I have a contract. I can't get out of it. I'm stuck. I signed to this 5-year family plan or whatever it is. And now what do I do? And people, and rightfully so, don't want to go reach out to a lawyer. They don't want to go pay $300 an hour for advice. Where can people go to just start learning?
Right. Well, you know what? It's not even so much, well, in addition, I should say, to not wanting to seek out counsel, no lawyer is going to work for you. Because they know you're not paying $300, $400, $500 an hour, and they're not taking it on the come, meaning on a contingency fee basis, because you can't take a percentage of restart my cell phone service. You can't. You're on your own. You really are. So where is somebody left to go? Well, you know what? That's where I come in. That's what spawned this whole brand. I knew that there were too few places people could go. These in-betweener kind of cases, these tweeners, right? Where you get them, you get calls all the time where I cannot afford to do something for somebody. Mm-hmm. And they can't afford to pay me to do something for them. So I help them as best I can. I often do it for free. I often refer them to small claims court, give them some guidance.
Yep.
Because small claims is a great forum for something like this. We'll talk about why it's great in a second. But if you want a little bit of extra guidance, I don't say advice, because I can't give advice. It's unethical for an attorney to give advice. And I don't tell you what to do. I only offer some guidelines, some things that I would do. And if you want to do them, God bless, because they seem like they might be effective, right? So I'm offering legal guidance and peace of mind to do with what you'd like. And if you want to push back on your cell phone contract and strike that clause, good luck. You know what? They'll never go for it. And if you say, T-Mobile, I'm not contracting with you, I'm going down the street to AT&T. You know what? You'll get the same response there. Sometimes you're just stuck with stuff. So what do you do when you get screwed around?
Yep.
Well, that's where small claims court comes in. And in my experience, if you've got, say, small value claim, $100, $200, $500, too small for any lawyer to take, or for you to pay for any lawyer to take.
Right.
What can you do? Small claims court is a perfectly suitable forum for something like this, because their jurisdictional entry points are low. They're made for cases like this. The clerks are often very, very helpful because they know you're coming in by yourself, or what's called pro se, representing yourself. They'll help you write up a complaint. You'll file it. The cost is often nominal. And what I have found, and this is in my experience, doesn't mean it's going to happen all the time, but what I found is that rather than a company hiring counsel in some faraway city, have the counsel bone up on the case, on the facts, and the complaint, show up in court, by which time the legal bill is already $5,000, they'll just pay you. And you get what you want, you get your satisfaction, and life goes on, gets back to normal. It's a really nice opportunity that too few people take advantage of, I find.
I agree with you. Okay, just to be clear for people, so if somebody's like, I'm really mad at my husband, he cheated on me, I'm going to sue my husband. Talk about that and small claims court in a situation like that, because I don't think sometimes people know the difference between commercial, family, civil, criminal, things.
If you have a domestic issue and you want to file for divorce, that's not a small claim. That's a big claim and it's in the wrong court. I mean, there's a domestic relations court set up just for that. There's a probate court set up for trust and estates issues. There is a court of general jurisdiction set up for personal injury claims and commercial claims. And if you have a small value personal injury claim, I guess you could sue that small claims court, but it doesn't seem like it's well suited for that because those tend to be a little bit bigger anyway. Mm-hmm. You made me think of something else, something extra, which was, you know, I want to sue my husband because he wasn't faithful. And maybe it doesn't rise to the level of divorce, but you just want to take your pound of flesh.
Yeah.
It sounded to me a little bit like when people say to me, I want to sue the weatherman. Why? Because he stinks or she gets it wrong all the time. I want to sue the cable guy. Why? Because he didn't come between 8 and 11. I'm like, okay, you know, it's one thing to grouse about the way things happen and how life kind of gets the best of you sometimes, but you can't sue for everything. You can only sue for things the law recognizes a legal claim for. Somebody hits you with their car. Somebody breaches a contract. Somebody cheats on you and you want to file for divorce. You can't sue for everything. And often it's my job as a lawyer to listen to people who call with ideas that don't hold up. I listen to everybody tell me every part of their story because that's their day in court. That's usually where it ends. And they deserve that respect and that peace of mind and the day in court. And I explain to them why, rather than simply telling them that it's not a claim. And you know, 9.5 times out of 10, they go away satisfied because they had somebody listen to them. And they just want that. But you know what? Not everything's a case. You might think it is, but no, it's not.
Right. And I love how you hold space for people because you're right. Sometimes people are just emotional. I know when I went through infidelity, my rational brain was not there. Mm-hmm. I was in a state of fight, flight, or freeze. I needed to take action and I needed to take action now. And I had a million thoughts over a million different things. And it was so helpful just to talk to some people who could ground me and be like, I'm really sorry, Laura. And here are the things that you might want to think about.
Yeah. And the things that you don't want to think about because they're not going to serve you. Mm-hmm. And have somebody provide a little bit of guidance who's got some extra expertise to do so. Boy, it goes a long ways with people. And I don't get paid for probably 90% of the stuff I do, but you hope the 10% pays for the rest. But, you know, to give people that peace of mind, and develop that goodwill and to let them know that they have a resource and to tell their friends that they have a resource. If mm-hmm. you want to bounce something off me, that's how you ought to do it. I just wound up a case totally not in my space. It was a case where some little girls got abused by a family way down the line. And the dad wanted to sue the really, really remote family members. And I'm like, the first thing I thought is, God, I don't know if there is a duty for them to have said anything to the extent they knew anything, that is, because they're really attenuated. It was kind of like, you know, I'm standing next to you on the curb and you step off and I see the bus coming. I don't say anything. Do I have a duty to hold you back?
Right.
Not necessarily. Depends on the state, I believe, but not necessarily. Mm-hmm. Because I don't owe you anything. You're not a family member. I don't have any relationship like that with you.
Yeah.
And that was the same kind of thinking that affected me here. But I did a little looking and I found a case that suggested maybe there was a duty. And I just went for it and I did it. And 4 years later, it resolved. And I couldn't have imagined we'd pull it off and get them some money to help the kids. And we did. And then when it was not that I deserve a gold star for doing the right thing, and half of me thinks I shouldn't tell you this, but I ended up cutting my fee in half. I said, you guys keep the money, because they needed it worse than I did. And that is the stuff that will pay itself forward. And even if it doesn't, it's the right thing to do. And too few lawyers do it.
Yeah, I love that. What you said brought up a couple of different things that I want to address. First, moral duty, ethical duty, legal duty. Those mm-hmm. are different. Those are yeah. different. And sometimes we don't know. And can you sue your husband because he cheated on you? Probably not, but some states have some type of alienation of affection that maybe there's a cause of action against the other woman. Most states don't, but talk about it. Reach out to somebody, because that's my second point. All states are different. All states are different.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. These are all state law issues. There's no federal, what's called common law, which means kind of judge-made law that applies to people across the country. There isn't. I mean, just look at the abortion controversy. It's legal at the federal level, but now it's an issue for the states. So it's state by state by state where it's getting resolved. So there's your example of how state law can change from one state to the next. I mean, Arizona just came out with its law. I mean, we're talking, we're April, or what are we, April 13th, 2024. And they came out with, Supreme Court came out with a pretty harsh law yesterday. And Illinois, and Ohio, where I live. Okay. It was by constitutional amendment. It was found to be constitutional. It depends on where you are, state law issues. Mm-hmm. Now, the issue of, you know, moral obligation versus, or like kind of call it even a biblical obligation, you should do something because it's the right thing, right? And if you don't, you should get sued for not having done that. Best example is stepping off the curb.
Right.
Sorry, but that's not how it works. You need a legal duty for liability or fault, for responsibility, the potential to pay money or some sort of remuneration to somebody to attach. So in my case, had there not been a legal duty for somebody way down the chain to say something, and it was questionable. I mean, let me tell you, they said, no, there is. And I said, yes, there is. And that's why lawyers are in business, because you got something to fight about. But, you know, we fought over a legal duty. Mm-hmm. And they said there was none. Had it been strictly a moral duty, because I hadn't even found support for what I thought gave rise to a claim, then no way. And I thought it was only a moral duty to begin with until I did legal research. Did do moral research, I did legal research.
Legal research. Right. Yes, because if you're reaching out for a lawyer, it's a legal claim.
Right.
And that
if it's a moral issue, talk to your pastor or rabbi. I mean, seriously, exactly. Different arena.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And on the flip side of that, because I feel like we've kind of driven down this road of there's no duty, it's not a claim. On the flip side, so often there is a claim and we don't realize it. Mm-hmm. If your affair partner is stalking you, if your partner's affair partner is coming to the school and talking to your kids, if they are doing things to you, I mean, the whole fatal attraction bunny boiler, if somebody's doing things to you, you might have a claim against them. You might have some legal protection to protect yourself and your family.
Sure. And how about extending that to the online environment? I mean, if someone's doxing you or defaming you online, I mean, there's all sorts of things. And just because you're in a different context, like online, doesn't mean the regular laws don't apply. Now, they might not have caught up to the online experience yet, and there might not be direct parallels, but we draw comparisons and analogies. That's where lawyers' brains start kicking in, and we come up with theories that we think might work to provide a claim and a remedy. But you're absolutely right. I see all the time people just take it where a company screws them over, or, you know, a rental company keeps the damage deposit or charges them for, you know, an easy pass or something that they didn't sign up for. It's like, oh, you know, I guess I must have signed up for it.
Right.
You know what? Okay. Here's a good one. Here's a great one. My son, he's in college. He's got three friends who rented a house and they made a bit of a mess of the house, and the landlord threw them out. And the landlord said, just get out of here, sign this amended lease just to terminate it as of today. I'm not going to charge you for anything. They said, fine. Next thing you know, they get a bill for $30,000, supposedly based on a contractor's review of the premises, even though there wasn't even documentation to support that. And the landlord wanted $30,000.
Wow.
Holy cow. So they called me. And I first thing I did was I said, let me see the lease. And I read the lease. And here's an here's a perfect example. One of the things the landlord wanted money for was when the realtor who leased the house to the kids was on site at the end of the tenancy, she saw a cat. And there was a clause in the contract that said, if you have a cat on premises, it's $500 a day. And they'd had the place for 3 months. He added $1,500. That was part of the $30,000.
Oh.
So I read the lease and I saw reference to a cat. And I got to thinking, now this isn't legal. This is just common sense. I thought, you know what? She saw a cat. How does she know the cat was there more than just that day? How does she know the cat was even theirs? How does she know the cat even stayed there any measurable amount of time? It was just a cat for a day. So I said, there's no proof of anything related to this cat having stayed there for 3 months. Never mind this clause. Actually, on account of this clause, you don't get anything because you need to have the cat needs to stay there. You said it yourself. You have no proof. I said, $1,500, that comes off the top. We chinched and chipped and chiseled away at it till we got down to $648 for like a couple of months water bill because everything else was nonsense. And that didn't take a lawyer to discern. It took somebody reading the lease. So you might wonder what happened. So about, maybe 3 weeks ago, I keyed the address into Zillow, took a look. The landlord had renovated the whole place. He was going to sell the thing on, just on the market. He wanted my guys to underwrite his renovation because he pulled up everything that he was supposedly going to have them fix.
Yeah.
So that's nonsense. He never got back to me for good reason. Didn't even accept the $647 and they got out of it for free. So You don't have to be a lawyer to look the extra step to see whether the documents you've had to sign. And I said to these guys, did you read your contract? You didn't read it, did you? Like, no, I didn't. So of course you didn't read it. You're a bunch of college numbskulls. You got to read this stuff or have somebody read this stuff. I told my son, let me read your contract, your lease before you sign it. And you know what? He signed it anyway, never let me read it. But anyway, that's a perfectly suitable thing you can do on your own. Use a little common sense, a little elbow grease, a little investigation, check on Zillow, see if the guy renovated the place and didn't really need your money, and put together a letter, and they will never come calling again. And they haven't come calling since.
Yeah. I love that you went to common sense and to doing it yourself because you're right. Yes, there's legalese in contracts. Yes, there may be one or two paragraphs where you go, I have no idea. But if you pick through it and stay out of fight, flight, or freeze and can just read and think, oh, this doesn't make sense. And if it doesn't make sense,
Right. You don't need much in a letter. If you're the fly in the ointment, if your landlord's picking on 3, 4, or 5 tenants and you're the one who pushes back, believe me, you're pushed off to the side. He doesn't need to deal with you.
No.
He or she will focus on the others.
Exactly.
Be proactive. You have rights. They're out there if you just look for them.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of being proactive, talking on both sides of the coin here. One, proof. If somebody's bothering you, screenshots, saved emails, what are the kinds of things that do constitute proof? What should people be saving and keeping?
All right, I'll give you another real example. This is happening in real time. I was working on this before I got on this podcast with you today. My wife was in an auto accident. We had a perfectly valid policy for our car, as you'd expect. The company is denying coverage. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So what did I need to prove that we had coverage? I needed the contract. I needed the emails. I needed, what else? The coverage denial letter. I ended up putting together a 15-exhibit compendium of proof to demonstrate why not that, which is the second time I've used that phrase. Mm-hmm. Tell them that and they won't believe you. Show them why and they'll have no choice but to agree. Showing the adjuster why we do indeed have proof and why there ought to be coverage. I've tried reaching them and my counsel, I have coverage counsel. That's another discipline, insurance coverage counsel. I happen to know the best coverage guy in the state of Ohio. It's kind of a professional privilege. I know these guys. Yeah. And he got involved with me and they've ghosted both of us. So enough's enough. I now have to file a complaint in federal court suing my insurer for improperly denying me coverage. And I'm going to attach all 15 exhibits, which again would be the policy, the declination letter, a bunch of emails. I I had some discussions with my claim, my agent, and he claimed I didn't. So I went to T-Mobile.com and I mined my cell phone records to find reference to the calls I made to him on the date I made them. And my proof demonstrated that I made them for no other reason than to ensure I had coverage, because there were no other insurance-related issues on the map at the time. I had to disprove that there were. Those were more emails. I mean, it was a whole forensic undertaking, and it was a pain in the neck. But you know what? There's a lot of money at stake on this one, and I got to do what's necessary to protect us. Now, can you do that short of a lawyer? This one, no. This one's going to federal court.
Right.
But with a reasonable insurer who plays fair, you'd like to think they would do what's right.
That's what I would.
On how undeniable the proof is. And that's something you absolutely could do on your own.
Absolutely. Okay, so I can hear people's minds turning and thinking, that makes sense. But you know what? When my partner left, he took the laptop and I don't have the policies, or I don't know where things are kept. Help.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you do?
There are only so many moving parts in a relationship. I mean, you've got your finances, you've got your auto insurance, you've got your credit cards, you've got your mortgage. And it would probably be a good idea on the front end to get a handle on who the vendors are. Is it Rocket Mortgage? Is it Allstate? Is it Merrill Lynch? You know, those sorts of things. And who the names of your contacts are there, because you want to call that person. You don't want to be left in the dark and flailing around. Because I know all too often the guy's the one who handles all the finances, and it's totally unfair, it's totally imbalanced, and you feel totally disabled and helpless, and you should never be in that position. My wife and I talk all the time about where things are and who's running, and we have a meeting coming up on Tuesday with our trust and estates lawyer. Get a trust. That's important for estate planning. And, you know, we're both going to be on it, of course, because she, like I, need to understand precisely how our trusts work. I'm not a trust lawyer. I mean, I do class actions. So, you know, if I learned anything in practice, it's that when you're getting into some kind of complicated areas, find somebody who knows them better than you do, because I don't know a lot about a lot of stuff.
Right. And I appreciate that you said that, because so many of my women are like, I'd like to try to work it out with my partner. I'd like to try. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know how long I'm going to try, but I'd like to try. Mm-hmm. And what I'm always telling them to do is, in that time, start collecting documents, start getting names of companies, start getting policy numbers, get some money, get a credit card in your own name, start doing some things just so you're prepared in the event that things go south.
Yeah. And even if they don't go south, it's something you should know. Don't feel guilty about it. No. Like you're working behind the scenes, some cloak and dagger kind of vibe. I mean, you're not. You're just doing what's necessary to be secured and comfortable in your own kind of financial being. And you deserve that.
Yeah.
Another thing you might want to do, and I suspect you talk about this, is take a look at the best divorce lawyers in town and give them a call. Because the minute they talk to you is the minute they're conflicted and can't talk to him.
Yep.
So consider that. That's
a good one. Thank you. And then kind of on the flip side of this, what not to do when you are hurt, when you've just been betrayed, when you're emotional, when you're doing all these things, what are some of the things not to do?
Well, I'm no stranger to just kind of the emotional wellness space and therapy, and trying to stay in wise mind and be focused and serene and thoughtful. And that's the place between being completely regimented and rigid and being completely and totally unhinged.
Right.
You know what you are after and what you want to get and what your goals are, but you need to do it from a contemplative place. And what I wouldn't do is start canceling accounts. I wouldn't start blabbing. I wouldn't start defaming anybody. I wouldn't start stirring the pot. I wouldn't start putting him on notice so that he does that, which we just described you ought to do, and gets the scoop on you, which could already be happening. It is a cloak and dagger kind of vibe. And it's really sad. I mean, I've not been divorced and I don't want to get divorced. And but it's hard. it's really tough to work stuff through. And, you know, all I would, and this maybe is out kind of out of my area, so to speak, but I just recommend, you know, working as hard as you can to work it out. And we've, you know, we worked stuff out for, it's been 31 years and it's still going fine.
Yeah.
Kids are out of the house.
Which helps.
And my son said that's when I can see you guys separating. Like, why is that? Because you're gonna have too much of each other. I'm like, I was kind of looking forward to it.
Exactly. No, this is the good part.
Yeah, this is supposed to be fun.
Yeah, exactly. No, I like what you said. You said don't cancel accounts. And then something you said is don't defame. Let's talk a little bit about that, because you're going to be mad at the affair partner. You're going to be mad at other people. And you had mentioned stuff online. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people want to get online and start sharing details mm-hmm. and saying things about the other person. Say a little bit more about that. What is defamation in the first place? People might not know.
I mentioned the American Bar Association earlier in that program that I ran. This is total coincidence. I just so happen to have the ABA Journal here, and I kept this one because it's got an article on defamation. You know, and I want to read this because I'm actually coming out with a book to support the brand, and I'm populating with lots of chapters on different legal issues, and one of them is going to be defamation.
Nice.
And here it says, libel cases are on the rise and increasingly politicized. So, you know, there are very specific elements or points you have to prove to be found liable for defamation. Just ask Amber Heard. Now, this is a state law issue. So they're generally the same, but they have some variation among the states. And I can't remember, there were, I think, seven of them in Virginia, which is where her case was tried.
I think so.
And she didn't have any aptitude for what they were. She just popped that thing up on the WashingtonPost.com and just figured, let the chips fall. Wow. If she could only take that one back for, I think it only settled for like a couple million bucks only, right?
Only.
But I can't remember the specific elements. If you Google elements of defamation, you will get a general description of what you should not do. And it's essentially lying about somebody, and truth is a defense to defamation, but don't get in court to defend the truth. All right. The guy really is you don't want to be there. Trust me. It's not worth the candle. And it needs to have, but Donald Trump just sued Joris Stephanopoulos and ABC News for defamation too. I just did a piece on that for Fox and I did go through the elements.
And it doesn't exactly matter. What I like about it, what you said is Google elements of, because that's a way that you can at least educate yourself. Elements of whatever it is, defamation, mm-hmm. elements of, that's helpful.
Very easy one. Very easy one. Let's see. And if there's anything on your mind, elements of breach of contract, elements of negligence. I mean, everything, every claim, legal claim here, every legal claim has elements or things you need to prove to a court or jury satisfaction before you'll win. And if you don't know whether you have a claim, or you're wondering, is there some legal wrong that I have a right to remedy? Just pop up what happened to you, plug in elements, and see what Google has to say.
Yeah.
And you know, the weather was cloudy when it's supposed to be sunny. Can I sue for that? No. Somebody hit me when I stepped up the crosswalk. I noticed he was texting. Can I sue for that? Yes. That's a negligence claim. Mm-hmm. Common sense stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Somebody smeared me online and it wasn't true, and they brought my kids into it. Can I sue for that? Defamation. Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. But somebody smears you online and it is true.
Oh, and it is true. Well, there's your defense to a defamation case. It's the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Do you want to? Yeah, but do you want to go there?
Depends on what's at stake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Amber Heard said it was true about Johnny Depp. You know what? Who determines the truth? The jury. You could think it's true. If the jury disagrees, doesn't matter. You're still wrong and you're still going to lose. So be careful.
And I love that you said that, because it's such a tightrope.
Mm-hmm.
You have a legal remedy. Maybe you do. Were you in the right? Maybe you are. Do you have enough proof? Will you be believed? Is it worth the cost? Is it worth the time?
Do you have enough money for a lawyer to pursue this for you? Is there enough at stake for the lawyer to take a third as a fee to pursue it for you? I mean, there are a lot of considerations. There are a lot of sad cases where maybe there's my auto insurance case. Let's say there's $50,000 at stake. I don't want to do it, but you know what? I'm not going to find a lawyer to do it. I'm not paying a lawyer $350, $400 an hour. And the lawyer's taking a third of 50 grand or something. So you know who's going to be stuck doing it? Me.
Right.
But I'm doing it anyway. So I'm pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm right.
Exactly.
I know what they are. I've got the proof.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, here's the other thing. Now that we've educated people a little bit, hey, you can Google elements of, you can figure it out. You know that there's small claims court. You know that there's different courts for different issues. You know that you maybe could reach out to attorneys. How do you tell who is a nice, lovable lawyer and who's going to drag you through the mud? How can you tell if your lawyer is a good one?
I actually have a video on that. I think it's called something like How to Find a Lawyer.
Let's attach that to the show. That would be great.
There are a couple of sites out there that are credible. You can go to that rate lawyers and they vet them suitably and you can feel comfortable and confident in the results. One of them is Avvo, AVVO.com. Mm-hmm. One of them is Super Lawyers. I think it's superlawyers.com.
I think it is too.
Yeah. And they're both high end. I mean, they really do their homework. So if you need a, this is the most common example, so I'll just give it. You know, you're in a car crash. It's a tort claim. A tort is a legal wrong. So getting hit by somebody who's careless, wasn't paying attention, that's legally wrong. So that's a tort. And you need a tort lawyer. And the claim you want to sue for is negligence, carelessness. The driver was careless. She was texting or on her phone or whatever. So you get on to say Super Lawyers or Avvo, and you're in Denver. And you plug in negligence lawyers, tort lawyers, personal injury lawyers in Denver, get a whole bunch of them, start making your calls. Now, it might be a function of who's busy, who's high end, who's got time, who's interested. Because let's say you sprained your ankle and it's not that big a deal. You didn't even go to the hospital. You just kind of walked away, you wrapped it, and you were fine. You know, your damages, meaning the money you owed for what happened to you, not that much. And believe me, you don't want to be a high-end tort victim. I mean, that is not the kind of, not the way to make money. No. Never ran those billboards you see on the highway. I got $800,000. I saw one yesterday. That is not how you want to get $800,000. You were messed up for $800,000. Okay. So you'll probably find some low-end lawyer to take it, if anybody. If, God forbid, there's a fracture, you break your leg, you break your back, you die, God forbid, and your spouse's, and you're a surgeon with four kids and a burgeoning, in a blooming practice, that's a big case and lawyers will be jumping at that. So those are the ends of the spectrum. You know, who's going to take a case within those ends? I don't know. I can't know. And who's going to take your case? I don't know what happened yet. Nothing. We're hypothetical here. But that's the space you're in when you're looking for a lawyer. And that's not a bad space. At least you know a resource to go to where you have choices now.
Yeah. And I really like and appreciate that you say you have choices, because when you're scared, when something has happened and you're over your head and you're like, I don't know what this is, it's easy to feel like the first expert I find is the right place to go. Mm-hmm. And there are many different lawyers with many different personalities, and there's never just one.
Oh, there's so many. They're falling from the trees. Talk to a few. If they'll talk to you, that is. If it's a low value claim and nobody talks to you, that kind of tells you the story. But if their lawyer's interested, and you don't want a case where lawyers are interested, that means something bad happened to you.
No, but you don't.
What that it happens, right? Like you're going through divorce, you know, and there's stakes here, and there's a high net worth couple, and there are a bunch of kids and a lot of property. A lot of lawyers will be involved, and they're not doing it on the come. On a contingent fee basis, where they're taking a percentage, usually a third, they're doing it by the hour. And now you got to start wondering and, getting anxious about how much it's going to cost and who's going to pay. Because at $450 an hour, which isn't unreasonable.
No, not at all.
That can break you in a week. Yeah, got to be smart. So maybe you settle for somebody who's a little cheaper and you get what you pay for, but at least you got somebody.
Yeah.
You get somebody who's good and he or she nails it quickly. I don't, these are the tough choices.
Yeah. Okay. A couple of other things that I want to talk about. First, you have talked about doing things pro bono, and that's where a lawyer does something for free. They take a claim for free. Where are places that people could reach out to find out if there's a pro bono lawyer? I know when I was in law school, we had a legal clinic and it was hard to get in, but it was an option. So reaching out to a law school might be an option. Where else can people go to find pro bono attorneys?
Two places come to mind. One is, major cities have law schools. Often the law schools have legal clinics and the clinics specialize in different areas. like an appellate clinic or maybe a housing clinic or something like that. You can call the school and find out. It's a tough group to get into because they only have so many law students who can, they can put on this. But major cities often, or marketplaces, you don't have to be in the city, but they often have legal aid societies. Mm-hmm. If you call legal aid, depending on their, how many cases they have, how many cases they have in queue, and their staffing issues, because it's a lot of volunteer lawyers who make legal aid run, they might or might not take your case. But legal aid is a great resource to go to. Yeah.
And other than that,
yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, the landlord tenant thing I did, that's a pro bono. If you have a friend who's a lawyer, maybe they do something on the house because it's a courtesy, mm-hmm. which is a nice thing if it's not going to take up a terrible amount of time. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of not a third option, maybe two and a half, kind of second and a half option.
Yeah. What about the online places like the LegalZoom and things like that? Mm-hmm. What is your opinion of that? What can people reasonably expect from a service like that?
Well, I found that those are good for forms. If you need a standard lease or a standard contract or a standard promissory note or something like that, you'll pay and they'll give you, you'll key in the facts and then they'll populate a form and they'll give it to you. And, it's kind of a one size fits all thing. It really ought to be a function of state law. Like we said, if, both parties are in, say, Ohio, it ought to mm-hmm. be drafted pursuant to Ohio law. Maybe one's in Ohio and one's in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Get into dicey intrastate law legal issues, so that can get dicey, and that no form is going to be able to tackle. But in terms of an ongoing representation, like if you're hitting a car, you're not going to find somebody like that online. You're going to find the forms, and I'll confess, where I've been in a space I'm not comfortable with and it's been late and I want to knock something out and I can't call a friend for a form, mm-hmm. I've gotten on one of those things. I've done like the free enrollment. I've gotten the free form.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I got a quick contract out of it. Next day, of course, my lawyer sees what I did. He gets mad at me. He's like, what are you doing? This is my
right.
job.
What is this?
I got to undo this. Got to unwind this.
Right. So, right.
Get what you pay for.
Yeah. Yeah. You absolutely do. And then you alluded to this earlier, but I also want to talk about this, the difference between legal guidance and legal advice, because mm-hmm. you had mentioned that. And as a lawyer, the work that I do too, I will offer legal guidance to my clients because my clients are all over the US. I'm licensed in California. I'm licensed in Colorado. I will give you legal guidance, but I don't know each state's specific rules. So talk a little, and you had mentioned that. So talk a little bit more about what is guidance versus advice and why do we care?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I was really keen on this when I started my brand because there's an ethics rule that I think exists in every state that says lawyers can't, I don't want to phrase it the wrong way, but it has to do with advice. You can't just give peddle legal advice. There's right. got to be a relationship. I got it a little bit wrong, but just stick with me. So I called the chief, I forget what his official title is, chief attorney, chief counsel of the Ohio Bar Association's ethics division. I totally got that one, but he's down in Columbus and he runs the ethics department. And I run everything past him. I don't do anything without asking him first. It involves ethics. I'm really careful about doing things the right way. And I said, I want to help promote people's legal wellness, but I'm concerned about giving advice. And he said, well, giving advice would be as if you were talking to somebody one-on-one and you're advising them what they should do. He said, your message ought to be as if you're giving it in an auditorium, just broad strokes, legal guidance, just suggestions, what you can do, what works for you. Do not tell them what to do. I've never right. told anybody what to do because that's not my job. It's not my role. They're not hiring me to advise them.
No.
Just looking for a little bit of guidance to help, run their lives a little better.
Yes.
So I'm really mindful of that.
Yes. So people can reach out to you, to me, to other people who are similar to us and get information like, is maintenance still a thing? Is maintenance different than alimony? Is there child support? Do I have a right as a tenant? Wow, my husband dropped me off of our fitness plan and mm-hmm. I still want to go to the gym. Like they can reach out to people and say, is this a legal claim? Who would I talk to? What are some of the rules around this? But they are not being told, in your case, you That's call. Right. Yeah.
I say, here's the law. Here's the space. Here's what's happening in that space. You decide what you want to do. I'm not telling you anything about what you got to do. Just giving you tools.
Yeah. And I think that's invaluable because it lets people determine for themselves what's worth it and what's not worth it.
I think you're right. I mean, you have to decide if you want to file against somebody who doxed you or something. Mm-hmm. I would never say the elements for a doxing claim are A, B, and C. They happen here. You have a claim and you should sue. No, it's not my business. You're not calling me to ask me whether you should sue. You're asking me about what doxing means.
Exactly.
Yeah, honestly, you could get on Google and find out that way too, if you want. Yeah. It's a little less approachable because I'm somebody telling it to you, but what you do is up to you. And that's fine. It's fine. Yeah. Free will still matters.
Absolutely, it is. Well, in wrapping up, I want to say how much I appreciate the whole idea of legal wellness, because you're absolutely right. The best way to take care of yourself is to stay out of court in the first place, mm-hmm. is to realize, really, I should not be doing this to somebody. This is not a good idea. I can't go over and sledgehammer the affair partner's car. I can't go over and slash her tires. I can't physically attack my husband. I mean, I can, but I probably really shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about just breathe? Breathe a little more. Yeah. You usually calm down.
Yeah. So where can people learn more about you? And you had mentioned your videos. I know you have a lot of great videos that cover a lot of different things, from content like that, picking a lawyer. Where can people start finding this information?
Well, I'm on all the platforms. If you go to my website to start, yourlovablelawyer.com, you'll see everything there and more. Got a YouTube channel, Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. So everything is out there for you to see and appreciate and use as you like. And if you have questions, you can always ping me and I get back to everybody. In keeping with the brand, I'm totally approachable and it matters to help everybody because I know what it means to have a question and be angsting and like a medical question, usually my setting, right? Because legal questions don't kill me like this, but you know, you have a question for a doctor and you ask it on a Friday, you got to wait till Monday. You're like, it ruins your weekend. It kills you.
It does.
I call people back all the time. And I apologize. I'm sorry if I'm calling you on a Saturday. Is that okay? Oh my God. Yes, that's fine. Sure. Okay. Well, you wanted to know, and here's somewhere you can maybe learn some more information. Yeah. And I'm pretty good for that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for showing up in that space. Thank you for being there for people.
You're welcome.
Yeah, because you're absolutely right. We are all entitled to access to justice. And sometimes it's just a quick question. Is this a claim? Am I crazy? Does this matter?
I couldn't agree more. And it's so elusive and mysterious to people, and it needn't be. Because, you know, we're just people trying to solve problems together.
That was perfect. Thank you. I will put all the links to your social, your website, specifically that video. And thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. And listeners, I really hope this was illuminative to you because it is complicated. There is a lot. Yeah. Jurisdiction, different courts. And my ask for you is not to shut down, not to start thinking, I don't know. Just to be like, oh, hey, all I need is clarity. And there are people out there just like Danny who can help give you clarity. So have an amazing week. And as usual, always remember to flaunt exactly who you are, because who you are is always more than enough.
Wait a minute. Before you go on, I've got something for you that you are going to love. It's the Sparkle After Betrayal Recovery Guide. A downloadable guide that shows you exactly how to untangle yourself from the past, powerfully reclaim your sexy, and re-choreograph your future one step at a time. The best part? It's free. And downloading it gives you access to our monthly support calls as well. What are you waiting for? Break out of the pain and get your sparkle on today. Go to nakedselfworth.com. That's www.nakedselfworth.com and get your guide today.
Tune in next time to Flaunt. Find your sparkle and create a life you love after infidelity or betrayal with Laura Cheadle every Wednesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Uncover the truth of what's possible for you on the other side of betrayal and develop the skills and strategies necessary to embrace the future and flourish today. Download your free Betrayal Recovery Toolkit at betrayalrecoveryguide.com.